I want to make things happen in my life. So I'll take whatever comes my way, but I'm going to have a plan. And my plan is if I wake up tomorrow and I don't have any feet, I'm still going back to the Olympics as an amputee. You can't take that from me.
That was 5-time Olympian, 9-time world champion, and 3-time Olympic gold medalist in track and field, Gail Devers. Hi, everyone. I'm Celeste Headlee. Welcome to Women Amplified from the Conferences for Women. Gail Devers is not a stranger to a challenge. The 5-time Olympian, 9-time world champion, 3-time Olympic gold medalist in track and field was one of the fastest women alive for almost 2 decades. But the hurdle she faced off the track, battling thyroid eye disease and Graves' disease, were just as daunting as those she faced on the track. Just in time to kick off Women's Health Week, I had the privilege of talking with Gail Devers about her success as a star athlete and to explore her story of recovery, resilience, and perseverance. Today's episode is brought to you by Horizon Therapeutics for Women's Health Week. So let's get started. There is no doubt that we will walk away from this empowered to take some risks and find our own purpose to live our best lives, both at work and at home. Gotta take it on. Gail Devers, I am so excited to be talking with you today. You are a world-renowned track star, 3-time Olympic gold medalist. You've been living with Graves' disease for more than 30 years. And for those who are not familiar, Graves' disease is an autoimmune disease in which your immune system attacks healthy tissue in your thyroid gland. Now, you started feeling symptoms, and it took 2.5 years to get a diagnosis after that. I feel like your experience of getting yourself through this, and most people know the end of this story, right? You got your diagnosis, you got treatment, you went on to be in multiple Olympics, you were in the National Track and Field Hall of Fame. But in between those two things,
right.
In between this was you having to just have a rock solid sense of yourself, of who you are, of what your body felt like when it was healthy and what it felt like when it wasn't. And I feel as though that is something that many people, especially women, want to learn how to do. How did you learn that?
I don't think it's learned. I always tell people, everybody has within them what I would call that championship mentality. But sometimes when the walls are closing in on you and you feel like there's no way out, that's when you've got to reach even deeper inside yourself to find what it is that makes you you. And if you have to reach to your toes, which I felt like I reached beyond my toes, and I don't even know what's beyond my toes, but I reached beyond to keep searching for answers. And that's just because you don't like the space that you're in. And if you don't like where you are and you know it's not you, this was not you yesterday, this was not you 2 days ago, this was not you a month ago, you have to keep searching. There's somebody out there who can help you find the answers. You can't just take, you know, that's like, my example is, and I guess it doesn't really apply these days, but back in the day, if you had your car and your car was making a knocking and you took that car to the shop and they're like, oh, I'm sorry, I don't hear a knocking. There's really nothing wrong with your car. And you take it back on the road. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then as soon as you get back on the road, you hear that knocking again. You take it. Okay, I'm going to take it to somebody else. Take it to somebody else. And they're like, oh, I don't hear a knocking. They just turn the car on and they don't hear the knocking. And you go back out. Well, you know, eventually, if you keep doing that, because you know you heard that knocking. I don't care if they heard it or not, you heard it. And if I keep driving this car, hearing a knocking, whether somebody else hears it, it's going to lead to something else. So you've got to keep going to somebody. So now maybe this next person that you go to, you're like, there's a knocking. I know because old Betsy, when you turn old Betsy on, she's going to not knock just because you're here. But I need you to do some other type of diagnostic testing. I need you to dig deeper and find an answer for me because I'm not leaving here until I get an answer. That's basically where I was.
Okay, so then take me to the moment when you finally got your diagnosis. What was that like?
Oh, goodness. That was finally. I start with then finally. After almost 3 years of searching, I was diagnosed. And I had to leave my house because I said I had stopped leaving my house at a point because you get tired of other people asking you questions of, oh my gosh, what's wrong with you? Especially if they're people who know you, but they haven't seen you in a while. and I had lost so much weight. People actually asked me, are you on drugs? Are you anorexic? What's going on? You know, have you gone to the doctor? Well, yes, I've gone to the doctor. Well, what did they say? Well, they say there's nothing wrong. Oh, okay. Then they give you that look. Or there are people who just won't say anything because they don't know what to say. And I guess I have to assume that my mom's statement of, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. Maybe that's where they were with that. But the searching, the looking for Gail, the not looking at myself because this was not the person that I was used to seeing, the appointment after appointment, and then the anxiety of going to these appointments and waiting for them to diagnose you, take the test, whatever they're going to do, and then come back and say, well, I'm sorry, I don't see anything wrong. Maybe you need to just take a little time off, just take time. Maybe you're just a little tired.
Mm.
Waiting for that person to figure out, what is this person actually going to tell me this time? So I remember this one day I had to go up to UCLA, which is the college that I went to. I think I had to see my coach for the life of me. And it's been, what, over 30 years. And I still don't remember why I went up to the school that day. But I went up, and for each team that you were like a track team, we have a physician that's assigned to us. Mm-hmm. So I hadn't seen Dr. Otis in years. And I poked my head in the door and she tells me to wait. And anxiety immediately, I'm like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, here we go. She's going to ask me all these same questions that I don't have answers to. I knew I shouldn't have left the house. You know, all these things go through your head. So I waited, and he comes up to me and she hugs me, and I'm thinking, okay, hopefully we're just going to catch up on old times because this started the nice way. And she takes out her stethoscope and she starts examining me, and I'm like, okay. You know, and she tells me, you know, Gail, I don't want to alarm you, but I think you have a very serious problem with your thyroid. It was scary, but it was also a relief because I had never heard of a thyroid. I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
You know, this is 80, 90, you know, I don't know what that is. By this time, it's like 1990. I don't have a clue what that is still. But it was a relief. I'll be honest. It was a relief. Like, okay, finally, somebody actually said that there's something wrong with me. Great. Okay, what do we do? And I was like, you have to go to the doctor with me. Because she was like, do you have an appointment? I said, yeah. For some reason, Tuesdays and Thursdays must mean something to me. Because this was a Tuesday. I had an appointment on a Thursday. I said, yes, I have an appointment on Thursday with a doctor whose name I just found in the provider book. And she said, you don't need me to go. She wrote down this test. She said, I want you to have, tell them this is what you need to have done. And so I remember going home and saying, I felt like a new person. Like, okay, finally, I have something. I have artillery in my pocket that I'm like, you know what? I can use this. I can tell these people. I've got messages that I can tell people that when you tell me there's nothing wrong, no, look, here, this is what I want. There is something. Somebody did find something. And so I remember going back and forth with myself trying to figure out, okay, I'm just going to go into this doctor and I'm going to let him tell me there's nothing wrong. And then I'm going to whip out my little paper and tell him, look, you know, it's an interesting feeling after 3 years of searching to finally have an answer. And that's what I had in my pocket, was the answer. And I was going to use it and kind of stick it to him. Like, look, you guys have been telling me for this, you know. And so that's what the plan was. And I remember sitting there and he walked in and I was like, oh, you know, calm, cool. I'm like, I'm going to let him do his little thing. And I couldn't wait. As soon as he came in, I whipped out my paper. I said, I need to have this test. And he just kind of looked at me. And I remember his face. He looked at me like, okay. And he said, I don't need your paper. I can tell you a walking thyroid disorder. And I started crying. The tears started flowing because it was like, oh my goodness. After all this time of searching, you know, for me, he was my hero. The second person in 2 days. Oh my gosh. And so that feeling, you're asking me that feeling of how I felt. It was a relief. It was still scary because, you know, we went through researches and scans and all the things that we had to go through to figure out what the diagnosis was and what the treatment process was going to be. But I had an answer. You know, I'm a big jigsaw puzzle put together, if that way, if you can say it that way. So I always put together puzzles. And when I did it with my daughter when she was younger, she'd always take that piece, that last piece, because she just had to be the one to finish the puzzle. So I felt like through all this time, I have been putting this puzzle together, started with the edges and I'm putting the middle together. And somehow this piece that's supposed to be whatever, a rose or whatever, is not coming because there's a couple pieces that are still missing. And he was part of that. My team doctor was part of that. So they were the couple of the pieces of this puzzle that I'm putting together. And we're eventually going to get to this beautiful picture that it's supposed to be. And so that's where I felt like, great, things are working. It's scary, but it can't be any worse than me not being under a doctor's care. And that's where mentally I had to put myself. I'm like, I'm better now than I was 2.5 years before when I was searching for answers, when my hair was falling out and nobody could tell me why, when I was having menstrual cycle problems and all of this. Now I'm under a doctor's care and there's a name for this. Now we got to figure out that name, because Graves' disease, when you already feel like you have 1 or 2 feet in the grave, it's not a good name. You know, I understand this name for the person, but oh my gosh, you know, but I'm better. I'm better now and I'm going to be okay was my thought.
Did you choose another name for it?
I just called it. It's just me. You know, it's a part of it. But because I did feel like, oh my goodness, for 2.5 years, I felt like I had 1 foot in the graves. I guess for me, it is fitting. But that's a scary diagnosis for somebody to tell you when you've already been feeling like that.
It sure is. And you then had to get back into, I mean, you went under some, what sounds like grueling radiation treatment. The treatment itself, at some point you couldn't walk, right?
Right. I went through, you know, I always tell people at my worst. So at my worst, I remember waking up, and I always preface this by telling people that, will this happen to you? I can't say that. You know, everybody gets a cold, but your cold does not turn into pneumonia for everyone. So everybody's journey is different, but being under a doctor's care will help. So for me, I remember waking up one morning and I had blisters on my feet. I'm like, okay, blisters on my feet. And I had one large one between my first and second toe where I actually could not put on shoes. You know, I was going into my Graves' disease doctor every 2 weeks to be treated and monitored, and everything was going well. So on this particular morning, when this happened, I went to a podiatrist. I went to a podiatrist because it's my feet, filled out the paperwork. And there, you know, this particular doctor tells me, on the paperwork, I said, I'm being treated for Graves' disease, because they ask you different things like that. He says, oh, this has nothing to do with Graves' disease. What you have is a very severe case of athlete's feet. I'm like, I am not dirty. You know, I took it to that level, because at this point, I'm like, okay, here we go. And so prescribed medications that I'm putting on my feet. My feet aren't getting any better. Actually, they were swelling and getting bigger. I got to the point where I could not walk. And it's like, I described the feeling of, like when some extremity of your body, like your feet fall asleep or your hands fall asleep, and you get that tingling sensation. That's kind of the sensation I had. But now my feet were big, because everywhere that the original doctor popped a blister or whatever that was full of blood, it turned into a scab. That scab turned into a sore. Then it's bleeding. It's got this yellow pussiness, this white pussiness, like a clear brownish gel, and it had a stench that you could smell from across the room. And then they're cracking and they're bleeding. In addition to getting larger, I couldn't put on shoes anymore, so I'm wearing socks. And I look down, my socks are, you know, bloody. I pull them off and my skin is coming off with it. That's how moist my skin was, I guess, at that time. And so I stopped walking around, even in my house. I would be in the bed, crawl to the restroom and come back, because the feeling that I felt, that they were so painful that it felt like from the ankles down, if you just tapped it, they would fall off. And so I remember this one particular day that I crawled to the restroom, got back in the bed, and probably, I want to say like 5 to 7 minutes, I was like itching. And so I started scratching, and not crazy scratching, but, you know, started on my knees. I'm like, oh, maybe I'm sensitive to the carpet or something. And then it started moving up, and I remember even scratching my face. And about 5 to 7 minutes after I scratched, everywhere I scratched started bleeding. I'm like, okay. I was fortunate. My brother was there visiting me. He took me into the doctors, and it happened to be the medical center that I was going to being treated for my Graves' disease. And I saw them, and the thought was, now, of course, I told you something about Tuesdays and Thursdays, because this was a Tuesday, and my next appointment was that Thursday. They told me, had you waited to come in, because I wasn't coming in for Graves' disease because it wasn't time. I just came in because this was happening and they just happened to be there. They said the possibility was that we might have had to amputate. And as an athlete who uses my feet to run on, I remember the thought. But I, more importantly, I think what I remember was when I first got the diagnosis of my Graves' disease, I said, okay, that puzzle is coming together. Things are going to be okay. And then this happens. When the diagnosis happened, I pulled out my sticky notes again. They were a little dusty, but I put them back, you know, put some new tape and put them back on the walls. Because I usually put them in several places in my house as a constant reminder to me of what I signed this contract for and what I'm working for. So I was back trying to work. And then I get hit with the ordeal with my feet. So I remember being in the hospital that night and praying that my feet would be saved and making this commitment saying, I'll run till the wheels fall off if that's what I have to do. But I also look for my other plan. You know, you got to always have an A and a B plan. Sometimes if you're really willing to work for it, you got to take it down to the Z plan. And I was willing, over those last 2.5, 3 years, I have been adjusting and readjusting and making a new plan. So I don't know if I was at Z at this point or not, but it was on one of those sticky notes, it was to go back to the Olympic Games, to catch up to the old Gail Devers. And what that meant was my life before all of this happened was running. I have to do it. Take my feet if you have to, because I believe everything happens for a reason. And if my feet had been taken, I had said that night, I was going back. You can take my feet, but you can't take my heart. Mm. You can't take what is a part of me. And that's goals that I've set for myself. Because if we have no goals, we have no purpose. We're just idly waiting for life to happen. I want to make things happen in my life. So I'll take whatever comes my way, but I'm going to have a plan. And my plan is if I wake up tomorrow and I don't have any feet, I'm still going back to the Olympics as an amputee. Mm. You can't take that from me, because that's how strong and how diligent I am in my beliefs.
What could the people in your life have done to support you? What would support have looked like for you at that point?
I got support. And I think dealing with Graves' disease and, you know, I'll even say because the 30 years plus now with this recent diagnosis of TED, support is you're there for somebody. Even if you don't understand what they're going through, you're there for them. And those, my family, my close friends who were a part of that, like my coach and my teammates, they supported me the best they could with not even knowing what Graves' disease was. And once we kind of found out, people started reading about it. I was still in college when it first started happening with the scaliness on my face. And I remember one of my teammates, she was a shot putter and discus thrower, Chris. And we had a class. And at UCLA, it's like 400 deep. You're in a classroom. And I try to get to class early. I'm right-handed. And she'd come with me and she'd sit on my right side so that she could block me so I could write and take notes and people couldn't see my face and ask questions. So the support I got was awesome. And I remember coming out to the track and Valerie Briscoe Hooks would tell me, you know, we don't care what you look like, Gailey, is what she called me. She's like, when you come out here, you better walk with your head up. You know, we could care less what your face looks like. So having that in my life, now it wasn't the answer, but it was at least that they accepted me for who I am, what I am. Like I said, my coach was the one saying, hey, you're losing weight. Every time I see you, you better have some stick to your rib food. You better come out here with peanut butter and jelly sandwich. I'm like, I don't like peanut butter and jelly. I'll eat peanut butter by itself or jelly by itself. He said, well, I don't care how you do it, but you better have some of that food. You know, they'd make me come over and eat and they'd have steak and potatoes, you know, all the stuff that's supposed to, and I'm still losing weight. So they knew that that wasn't it. And at least we've exhausted every avenue that we could to find out what's going on. And then, you know, you've got that memory loss where I remember him telling me, go over there and set up hurdles 1, 2, and 3, leave 4, 5, 6 out. And I like, what did he say? I walk across thinking I had it and come back and couldn't remember. I did that about 3 or 4 times. And he's like, okay, never mind. I'll go with you. So it was the support I got, my mom and my dad and my brother coming up and being there with me when I'm crawling on the ground. You know, they're pushing me in one of those roller chairs as an office chair to the bathroom so I wouldn't have to crawl. I got the support. You know, my friends didn't know what to say, those that were close, but they were like, I'm here if you need me. I'll even say, even now, dealing with, you know, you got this Graves' disease diagnosis. So I even assume coming back from my Graves' disease that everything that I was feeling was, you know, who am I to complain anymore? My gosh, you know, I've got my life back. My feet were saved. I'm back to the Olympic Games. I've done things that I wanted to do. And so the symptoms that I was still feeling with my eyes, like the irritation, the bulging, the redness, having to use drops everywhere I go or whatever, I thought that those were residual effects of my Graves' disease. And because nobody else told me anything different in all this time, not a doctor said, oh no, this is separate and needs to be, it's related, but separate and needs to be treated separately by an oculoplastic surgeon or a neuro-ophthalmologist. So I didn't know that. You know, I'm going over hurdles and my hurdles are blurry. I'm like, they're very blurry and I can't see it. So I'm not going to look at the hurdle I'm going over. I'm going to look to the future and think about the next hurdle that I'm going over. And hurdle is a rhythm. So I'm going to, you know, I don't want to run in rhythm. I know, but I do know the rhythm of hurdling, that when you come out the blocks, there's 8 steps to the first hurdle. There's 3 steps in between each hurdle. And there's 5 steps from the last hurdle to the finish line. And I don't want to run in rhythm, but I know it. So I'm just going to challenge that rhythm. Challenge those hurdles, challenge those steps. And I believe that the support that I needed and that I got at that point was what I needed at that time. But it also allowed for me and forced me to continue to be an advocate, because there's still something wrong. I always tell people when it came to my eyes, and I laugh because I feel silly when I say this to people, you know, I was still having problems with my eyes. And I remember it got to the point where, as I was driving, especially if it's nighttime, the light from the cars coming at me were starting to be blinding. And that kind of when it first started, my kids were younger. So I didn't want to say anything, because like I said, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm like, here you go complaining again. Oh my goodness. And it's just, it is what it is. And you just got to figure out that if this is my new normal, I'm back doing this, doing the things that I want to, just figure out how to navigate this new normal state. And so my husband and I would travel, you know, drive down to wherever. And so I tried to be pretty slick with this, or at least I thought I was slick. I'd say, oh, I'll take the first shift. I'll drive first. And then when it got to be close to nighttime or starting to get dark, if we're still traveling, I'm like, oh, I feel tired. You better take it. Now, mind you, I had insomnia. So I guess he probably knew, if we talk about it, he probably knew. I'm like, this child does not sleep. And if she does, it's like, you know, 15, 20 minutes or whatever. So whatever. She just doesn't want to drive at night. And then as my daughters got older, I remember telling people, I must be seriously going crazy because I'm wishing for Carson to hurry up and get her license. I'm like, who wants their young child to get their license so you can drive me around for real? You know, but I couldn't drive at night. And I realized how dangerous that was, that if I was forced to do this and something were to happen, I don't want to lose my life and I don't want to be the cause of someone else losing their lives. So I had to stop. So these are the things that I was still dealing with even now. It was very recent, as a couple years ago, that I finally figured out that I had Ted living with me for 30 years and he didn't tell me he was living with me. You know, so you got to give them a name if they're with you that long. I was like, I can't evict you, so I guess I'll give you a name and we'll come to terms with each other and figure this out. But even that was a missing piece of my puzzle and a missing piece of my team. So you talk about support. The support is not, you know, when I was an athlete, it was having your nutritionist, having your therapist, having your, you know, massage and your chiropractor, all the things you need, your coach, your this, your that. But for me, it was also adding my endocrinologist. And now that team, what that support looks like is also an oculoplastic surgeon or neuro-ophthalmologist. There are so many other pieces to this that I'm still, my puzzle's not done. When I look at the pieces, there are still pieces that I'm putting together to make this the perfect picture. And that's the support.
You're listening to Gail Devers, 5-time Olympian, 9-time world champion, 3-time Olympic gold medalist in track and field. This episode of Women Amplified is brought to you by Horizon Therapeutics for Women's Health Week. And Texans, today is your day. Registration for the November 16th Texas Conference for Women in Austin just opened, and you can get your ticket at a discounted early bird price if you register before June 18th. So head over to txconferenceforwomen.org to learn more. And speaking of discounts, prices for this year's Pennsylvania Conference for Women are about to increase. Those tickets are going fast, though. So if you're planning to join us in Philadelphia this October 19th, it's a good idea to register now. Early bird pricing ends this weekend on May 20th. So go to paconferenceforwomen.org to get your ticket while supplies last. And last but not least, a quick update for our Massachusetts area listeners. Save the date because registration for the 2023 Massachusetts Conference for Women is opening on Thursday, June 15th. Stay tuned for more details about that. Now, let's get back to our conversation. So you then went on to obviously become a world-renowned Olympic medalist. What did you have to do? How did you have to set things up to give yourself the kind of daily support to keep yourself in it? I mean, things became more difficult for you than they would have been, say, when you were in high school and winning medals. What kind of structure did you create yourself to make it possible?
Well, I'll tell you, when I first came back from the Graves' disease diagnosis of that 2.5, 3 years, it was about 3 years by the time I got on the track, and I couldn't just come back to the track. I still had the ordeal with my feet where I couldn't put on shoes, but I needed to be in that environment, that positive environment. So that was the diagnosis itself was a turning point. And I still had my goals. I still had my dreams. And I'm the type of person that I look at, you know, the irony, I guess, is that I do run hurdles. And so I look at the hurdles as something you have to get over. It's a challenge. And when you're faced with a challenge, you can either conquer it or be conquered. I choose to conquer. And this is just something else I've got to figure out how to get over. So again, how did I deal with it? How did I manage it? I wrote down on my sticky notes. I wrote my goals down. It was to be the best that I can be. And that means, you know, people say, oh, you can't give more than 100%. Okay, well, I believe you can give 100% and a little extra oomph. And if that extra oomph, that means I'm running with my heart. So I gave more than 100. You know, if I'm running 100 meters and I tell the kids that I coach, we're not running 100 meters, we're running 105. Because if you're running just 100 meters, you're going to see the finish line. And because you see the finish line, you're going to start slowing down about 5 meters before you get there. Races are won and lost at the finish line. I can Google myself to show you that. So we're going to run past the finish line, which is going to get us over the finish line with our 100% effort. And so that's what I did. I signed those sticky notes and I went to do everything in my power. So because I couldn't get back on the track, and it was slow going, you know, I brought a stationary bike on the track. And while everybody else was jogging to warm up, I'd ride my stationary bike. When they would do sprint workout, I'd ride faster. When they cooled down, I'd ride slower. I still had to do weight. So my youngest daughter, just to give you the backstory of this, my youngest daughter's name is Legacy. And she's always talking about back in the day. So this is my time. I guess I'm like ancient. So back in the day, when I couldn't get out on the in the weight room because I couldn't put on shoes and it just wasn't safe for me, we used to have big telephone books, yellow pages, white pages, and they had everybody's in your area's phone number. So you can imagine how thick they were. I would take telephone books and take like an ACE bandage and strap them onto my legs and do hamstring curls, calf raises, stuff like that. That was my weight. So I was being inventive as far as finding ways to do what I needed to do to get the job done, to accomplish my goals and dreams. And even walking, when I couldn't run and learning how to like take a step, my coach would put sticks. So we put sticks on the track and he said, okay, can you give me one? This is where we're starting, and work towards that stick. Okay, can you give me another one? And those sticks became symbolic to me for taking practice and everything else one step or one stick at a time and then build from there. I can't ask for it all together. It's like, yeah, you may say you want to go to the Olympic Games or you don't wake up tomorrow and go. There's a process. There's things that you have to do. There are steps that you have to take to get you there. And that's where I was. And it was with a lot of grit, a lot of determination, a lot of support from my coach, from my family, that 2 years after my diagnosis, about 18 months, that I qualified for Barcelona Olympics, which was my second Olympic Games. And I remember being in the women's 100 meter final. They gave me lane two. And the story behind that is they used to give you, you know, if you had the fastest times, you get lanes 4, 5, and 6. If they thought that, oh, this is where the race is, they put you in the middle of the track. So I always tease telling people they gave me lane two, which lets you know what they thought about me. But that doesn't matter because it's not about what other people think about you. It's about what you think about yourself and what you believe that you can do. And throughout this whole search and journey and quest for answers, I never stopped believing in myself. I never stopped believing that those dreams that I had written, because I believe that they were realistic, that they could come true. Now we've got to figure out how to make that happen, but it can happen. It's a realistic goal. So I visualized. When I couldn't get out on the track, I would still visualize myself throughout, not knowing this person that I see in the mirror that I stopped looking at. I still saw her. I saw the old her. I saw the old Gail coming out the blocks. I saw the old Gail work in the middle of her race. I saw the old Gail crossing that finish line. And that's something that you can't take away. In the hurdles, I take a stopwatch and mentally go through the race saying, set, go. And when I, you know, the gun went off in my head, I pushed the stopwatch. And 8 steps, I counted, you know, I'm running in my head or running. Actually, I was using my arms like I'm doing now. 8 steps, pitch. And I take the touchdown times, stop the watch, stop the watch. And then look at that total time and say, okay, if I could do it on my watch with my fingers and your hands tell your feet what to do, I'm going to do it again. I'm going to make this time. And so that's what I was doing. That's what kept me sane. That's what kept me saying, you know what? I see Gail. Now I just got to catch up to her. She's at the finish line. I've got to keep pushing to get to that finish line, no matter how dark my days are. You know, and there were times I tell people I felt like I was in a box and somebody put me in a box, taped that box up and invited people to come and sit on it. But the one thing that I always tell people, when there's a box and it's closed and you open it back up, it never closes exactly the same way. So they had to open the box to put me in it. And you can tape it up. But you're always going to still see, and you can have all your friends try to press it closed and help you. But there's still that little piece of like, oh my goodness, you can still see some light in there. And that's what I held on to. That if I can see the light, I can keep pushing till I get to the light. And that means all those people that are sitting on that box, those are every person that told me no. Every person that said that there's nothing wrong. Every person that said that I'm crazy. Or made me feel that I was crazy, or asked me if I was on drugs or if I was anorexic. All those people are sitting on that box, and I'm going to burst through that box eventually because I believe in me and I see myself where I'm supposed to be.
So I want to go to later in your career. And in 2007, when you were 40 years old.
Yes, I was the grandmother of the sport.
You won the 60 meter hurdles, and it was the best time in the world, less than 8 seconds for 60 meter and hurdles. You were only like a fraction of a second off a time you set in 2003, which is incredible. And you bested the recorded record for a 40-year-old, by nearly 0.7 seconds. I mean, I'm trying to imagine what that would feel like, but all I can think is that must have felt like vindication. I mean, just the, how you're proving on so many levels, proving your capability. But you tell me what that was like.
You know, I remember that race and coming across the finish line. Well, I'll go back. So, you know, when you go to a track meet, we have to go into a press conference.
Yeah.
And I remember going into the press conference, you know, room full of reporters asking you questions. And somebody asked, they're like, oh, so Gail, so you're here to break the master's record. So I'm like, excuse me? I'm not old, you know. So I was like, you know, I'm 40, but I used to tell people that I was 19. And then I was like, well, now I have kids. So I'm 21. So I'm forever 21. They even opened up a store about me, is what I tease people about. And I believe it's how you feel. You know, catching up to me, I'm 21. If you ask me, I'm 21. You know, but now in running years, I'll take it to the point. I think I told my track kids a couple weeks ago that they say dogs are 7 to 1 year. So I've got to be 20 to 1 in track and field. So I'm probably like 800 and something years old, but I'm going to act like I'm 21. And that's how I feel. I said, age is a number. And so when the gentleman asked me that question, I was like, no, I'm just here to run my best. But then I went back to my hotel room and I took out my sticky notes and I said, my goal is to run the fastest time in the world. And I posted it on my mirror in the bathroom and then on the door going out the room. And I said, that's my goal.
Did you post it on a sticky note?
Yes, it was on my sticky note. You know, I usually have the colorful ones, whatever, but I posted them in a couple of different places. I remember it was on the door because it's the last thing I wanted to see before I walked out to run. And it was on my mirror. So when I go in to use the restroom or brush my teeth or whatever, I'd see it when I wash my hands in the sink. And so I ran the race and I won the race. And Lewis Johnson was the commentator. And he said, hey, Gail, come over here. Got to have a talk with you. How did that feel? And I said, well, first of all, I've got to change something. Jay-Z just wrote a song talking about 30 is the new 20. It's 40. 40 is the new 20. It's about how you feel. And age is a number for me, and it still is. They laugh at me because I'll usually have some boots on, but I'm going over hurdles even now, coming out of blocks, you know, showing kids how to do what I want them to do. Or if they're not running the pace I want them, I'll shoot across the track and run next to them. I'm like, okay, come on, don't let the old lady beat you. Or I get the, you know, old lady discount, which means I'm going to be in front of you and you have to come get me. So it's about how you feel. Getting my diagnosis truly was amazing. Because it was rejuvenating. It gave me new life where I feel like I'm this superhero. Now I know I'm in reality, I am not, but I'm going to say that I feel like
you
that.
Kind of are.
Where no does not, and I teased before saying that the word no was not in my vocabulary until I had kids. Now it's no, you can't have that. No, you can't go there. But I won't allow anyone to put me back in that box. I won't allow anyone to tell me what I can't do. And if it doesn't work out, it's not because I didn't try. And my example for that is the 100-meter hurdles. Now, if you look in the Olympic record books, I don't have gold medals in the hurdles. But the hurdles is what people told me that I was. They said, you're just a hurdler. Now, I don't like the word just, but they said I was just a hurdler. And I've had some great races. I've had some fantastic years where I was on top in that event, but I don't have the gold medal, or I don't have an Olympic medal actually in that race. If I go back to 1992, when I came back from my Graves' disease and I won the Olympics in the 100, I always tell people that last hurdle fell. It jumped up and got me. I didn't really fall over the hurdle. So when I didn't get it in the hurdles, let's go back and say if I had gone and I had accomplished that. See, I never say that I'm going to win a gold medal. I never say that I'm going to do. I always ask in my writing is that I'm going to give my best and I want to be my best. And even when I'm on the line and I'm asking God to pray and I'm praying to him, I'm asking him to allow me to run better than I've run before. So that's not a time that I have in mind. It's just being better than where I was before. Whether it would be a better time or a better execution of that race or anything. And so in that, I'm doing exactly what my goals are stated to be. And so had I accomplished winning the 100 meter and the hurdles, I probably would have retired because my goals were met. But in not having that happen, now, I still meet people to this day who says, oh my gosh, I cried when you fail. And I have to say, I honestly did not cry. And they're like, you didn't? I'm like, I didn't. I asked to do my best. And on that particular day, that was my best. I got across the finish line. Now, I would have liked to have gotten across the finish line on my feet, but I still got across the finish line. And that's what it is. It's you keep pushing, you keep striving to get to the finish line or through the finish line. Now, I will admit that me falling on that day allow for me to go back and reevaluate and say, you know what? I'm going to come back. I'm going to do it again because I can better that, if nothing else, just by staying on my feet. And in doing my pursuit of accomplishing the goals that I had set for myself, look what I did. You're not promised every 4 years that you're going to be able to come back. The lifespan of a track athlete doesn't really span that long. And I look at my career and I had 25 plus years, which is not the norm. So I'm very thankful for that. I believe that everything happens for a reason. And my testimony, you have to have a test to have a testimony. And my test was my Graves' disease. And it continues to be a test that I have to deal with every day. You know, whether it be how I feel today with my eyes, what's going on with my body. So all these tests that I go through, I feel like it's a suit of armor that I put on. And now every test that I have to go through is just going to ping off of me. But what am I supposed to do with that? When you know something, you're supposed to say something. And I know so much now. Had I known, you know, even despite all the accomplishments that I had gone through, I still suffered from the eye symptoms that we talked about. They hurt. They were bulging. They were irritated. They were dry. And in all those years since, you know, I still go into doctors to have my Graves' disease monitored. I take medication every day, a small pill every day for the rest of my life. And it's a small price to pay to have the life and the quality of life that I have, but I was still having issues. And had I known back then what I know now, I would not have suffered for 30 years before I got my thyroid eye disease or my TED diagnosis. So what do I do now? I got to make sure that nobody else has to go through what I've gone through. That no one else has to be praying that their very new driver learns to drive at nighttime so that they can drive them so that you're not blinded by the oncoming cars. That clearly these hurdles that I'm going over, that I can see them clearly. I've got to make sure that if you feel something, you have to say something, that you become an advocate for yourself, that as a sprinter, which is what I am, but unfortunately, I took the marathon route to diagnosis. I don't want anyone to have to do that. I want you to get your diagnosis and get that team, that support team around you quickly so that as long as you're under a doctor's care, it's got to be better than it was before you got the diagnosis. And that's my job. So my job now is recruiting. I'm recruiting relay runners is what I say, because in the relay, I don't care how many people on a regular track, is four people acting as one, and your goal is to get the baton around the track. So in life, what it is, it's everyone. Everyone that you touch becomes your relay person. And what you're passing in this baton is knowledge. Because I say all the time, it may not be you. You may not have Graves' disease. You may not have thyroid eye disease. But I can promise you, you're going to come in contact with somebody in your life that's complaining of some of these symptoms. And if you can help alleviate their suffering, that's what life is about. It's the quality of life. Everybody deserves a quality of life. And somebody has the answer to help you get there. Anybody who has accomplished any amount of success, it didn't happen by themselves. We talked about that team of support. So in that team of support can come from anywhere. It can come from somebody that you just meet doing an interview with, or somebody that a chance meeting in the grocery store, or somebody that you see the symptoms of, it might be this. And you can let them know that, hey, I have a friend, or I know this about this person. Maybe next time you go to the doctor, you can say this, and that's going to help them. You just don't know how good that feels to have an answer for something that you've searched for. When you're having an out-of-body experience where you don't feel like yourself, and somebody can say, hey, I don't know if this is it, but this is a great place to start. It gives you the best sense of, I can breathe. I can breathe. And I have hope. And we got to give people hope, because if you have no hope, you feel like, why am I here? Everybody has to have a reason to get up every morning and a goal to work towards. But if you feel like all you're going to ever hear is no, then you wonder why. You talk about mental health and mental illness. It's real. It's real. And when you don't have answers for things that you know there should be an answer to, then you wonder why. And with the why comes the, am I living my best life? And if I'm not living my best life, is this how I'm supposed to be? We don't want that. We want people to have the answers that they need, to find the answers that they need and that they deserve, or to know the resources to go to find those answers.
Any last thoughts, knowing that a lot of the people who listen to this podcast are women, and they're often women who are looking for answers and solutions and a way to move forward. What would you say to those people who are listening right now and are inspired by your story?
Number one, trust your gut. Trust your gut. We know our bodies better than anyone else. Listen to your body. Monitor any changes, any symptoms that you notice. I don't care if it's big or small. Write them down. Write them down and report them to your doctor. You know, I'm that person that when I go to the doctor, he knows that we are not going to have a in and out. We're going to have a conversation, okay? And you just know that when I'm looking for a new doctor for whatever I have to do, we're having a conversation. You're not going to pass me off to look at a report. You're going to ask me, how have things been going since the last time I saw you? So I can pull out my little notes and tell you, well, I've been experiencing this, and can we figure out what this might be? Because if I don't report everything to my doctor, and you got to be able to find a doctor that you have a good rapport with, because if you can't feel comfortable and confident enough to report everything that you're feeling, big or small, and that he or she will actually listen to you and help you find the answer, then that's not the right doctor. So first of all, trust your gut. Second of all, be proactive. Stay on top of your routine doctor appointments. And I know, ladies, we are busy. And so often we put ourselves last, but putting yourself last can cost you and your family. We want to remember that we can't take care of those that we love if we're not taking good care of ourselves first. So if something feels off, don't wait. Make an appointment right away. And third, be your own best advocate. I mean, we talked about this throughout this whole conversation. Read up, educate yourself. Seek a second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh. I don't care how many opinions. Seek an opinion. It's as many opinions as you have to until you get the answers that you deserve. Whatever it takes, just keep searching. Don't stop, because you deserve the best quality of help, best quality of care. And the answers that you need are out there. Sometimes you just have to keep searching. You have to remember that, you know, I always tell people, I live in Atlanta and every day is, you know, they call it Hotlanta, but every day is not promised to be sunny. So what does that mean? That means that, you know, on those days where it's freezing cold or we got some ice or whatever, we have to weather the storm. And if I can weather the storm, eventually the sun's going to shine again.
Gail, thank you so much for your time. This has been an incredible conversation.
No, thank you for having me. And, you know, thank you for allowing me to be able to speak. Every time I speak about my journey and what has happened in my life, I believe somebody's listening and it's going to help them, but it's also helping me. It's helping me because it's refreshing to be able to look back and say, I've gone through this and yet I'm still going. I'm still pushing forward, regardless of what's going to happen in the future. I know what it takes to keep searching, to not let people put me in that box. I'm never going in that box. And success, what does success mean? Success means that you're your best you. And when you look at success, it's not just you by yourself. There's somebody that helped you. It's opportunity, access and opportunity. And so when somebody opened that door for me and allowed me to go through and be my best me, now I've got to help other people. Like I said before, what I wanted to do was I wanted to be a teacher. And I look at my life now, I would have been in a classroom had I done it the other way with 25, 30 kids. But living my life the way I've lived it, I have the world as my classroom. And I thank you for allowing me to teach and help other people be their best self.
Well, I really appreciate your time. So incredibly, inspiring, yeah, but also empowering, I think, to hear what you've been capable of and what you've overcome. So we really appreciate your time.
Well, thank you so much. And let's just keep inspiring and empowering each other.
That's right.
That's the relay team we're going. We're not going to go for a gold medal. We're going for platinum. That's better than gold.
We really hope you enjoyed this episode with Gail Devers, 5-time Olympian, 9-time world champion, 3-time Olympic gold medalist in track and field.
Gail has been living with Graves' disease and symptoms of thyroid eye disease for more than 30 years. To learn more about thyroid eye disease and to find a TED eye specialist near you, visit focusonted.com. This episode of Women Amplified is brought to you by Horizon Therapeutics for Women's Health Week. The Conferences for Women is the largest network of women's conferences in the nation. They draw more than 55,000 women and men to annual events in Boston, Philadelphia, Austin, and California. I'm Celeste Headlee, and this is Women Amplified from the Conferences for Women. Thank you so much for listening. Be kind and be well.